Hello to episode 74, I believe, if ethnically ambiguous. For these last two episodes of 2018, Anna and I are doing interviews, but to each other.
Hi.
Anna's here too, because I'm interviewing Anna today. And next week she'll be doing the reverse to me. So stay tuned.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are ethnically ambiguous.
Okay. With high demand, meaning one person that emailed us that said that he liked the suggestion. Thank you, Sean Lowry.
High demand.
We, for the next 2 weeks, because it's the holidays and we want to be easy breezy, we're going to interview each other.
Lemon peasy.
Lemon peasy, super cheesy.
I'm very emotional.
So for this first one, this comes out on Christmas Eve. And to stay warm this holiday season, we're going to warm you guys up with the details of lovely Anna Hosnier's life.
Great.
She's super pumped. She's not even looking at me in the face.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I was doodling as I do.
No, I know. I think it's like a defense mechanism. But
I love to doodle.
I mean, I love to doodle too.
I'm a doodle bitch.
I'm a doodle slut.
I'm a doodle.
I'm a doodle.
A doodle is slang for penis in Farsi.
Oh. I'm a dick. Yeah, I'm a peen.
I'm a little doodle.
So I know Anna fairly well. We see each other several times a week for the past couple of years, and I was thinking what would be the most fascinating part about you is many things. I'm fascinated by many parts of you.
I thought you were about to say what you want to talk to me about is the most fascinating thing about me, which I was going to pass out.
No. I think there are so many parts of you that are fascinating, and I had a hard time pinpointing one thing. But I do think our talks about mental health are very important, and I think people appreciate when we talk about mental health. And you touched on this in a recent episode, but I want to talk to you about your personal experience with mental health, because I feel like in a lot of ways it's very much different than mine, even though we both suffer from like seemingly similar things, whether it's depression or anxiety. I've been diagnosed with like a bunch of other things too, because doctors are weird. But in your case, because like
you were diagnosed with buttheadism.
You walked into that one. I told you that in private.
Could you imagine?
Can you not laugh?
It looks like you have buttheadism.
I'm private. I'm very insecure about my butthead.
What does that even mean?
My head is shaped
like a butt.
I actually
do have a butthead because when I was a child. No, wait for it. When I was a child, I'll show you my scar. I broke my head as a baby because we were playing.
That looks like a widow's peak.
It's not. It's like it's where the
okay.
There was like a stitches were there. I cracked my head open.
Whoa.
Here in the center of my head. There's a little dent. It's where me and my brother were playing Roadrunner and the
fucking cartoon thing.
Coyote and Roadrunner. Yeah. Is that what it was? Yeah. And so my brother always got to be the Roadrunner, and I could never catch him, and he slammed a door in my face. So that's where we're at, and the relationship has not gotten better since I was one and he was three.
It's not exactly a butt face, but it's a heart-shaped face.
It's not a butt face. This was a butt head.
Oh, but sorry. Sorry.
How dare you?
You looked at me with so much seriousness when I said butt face.
Oh, excuse. You know what? This interview's over.
We both have things with our heads, though, because my mom says my head is misshapen, or it was when I was younger, and now it's not.
Do you have to wear those helmets?
Because they pulled me out with tongs. Because I was in an emergency.
I'm sorry. That is the funniest thing you've ever said to me.
I've never said that to you before.
I literally just imagined you as if you were a turkey in an oven. And so I was just like, oh, is she ready?
No, because I was in an emergency C-section. I was supposed to be delivered normally. Okay. And then apparently the day of, my mom was going into labor and they looked at her vagina and I was like, my feet were there. And my butt was there except for my head.
Strangle yourself.
And so I had flipped myself over and I was like,
strangled with the umbilical cord.
Choking myself, and so that was I was in emergency C-section, and apparently they pulled me out with tongs.
Please,
and it was April Fool's Day.
I insist. I don't come out.
And then every time I get my mom angry, she'll complain that her scar hurts. So, yeah, it's full circle.
They pulled you out with little baby tongs.
So she said my head was misshapen because your head is very soft at that time
so
of life.
So the little tongs, like.
Yeah.
Little dents in your
head.
And she
said that with time it went away. But there are photos of me as a baby that I look absurd. I'll show you after this.
I can't. I'm sorry I laughed so hard about your mom's emergency C-section, but just the imagery of you being pulled out
when
by
you see
tongs
my head
while you're literally trying to hang yourself.
As a reward for doing this episode, very personal, like, I will show you photos of my baby head. But in the meantime, it's not about me, it's about you.
No, we have to continue about this baby
thong. You're deflecting! You're deflecting!
I already told you about my butt head disease.
Butt face.
It's a head.
Okay, no, for real. I appreciate that you guys appreciate us talking about mental health. And what I meant by us having different experiences was that when I was a minor, before I was an adult, my parents took me to a psychiatrist and I was very resistant because I didn't like being told what to do. And basically, I was just resistant based on the pure fact, even though I knew I needed help, I just didn't like that they took me.
Such a middle child.
I know. But with your case, you chose and you took the initiative to go to therapy.
Yeah, by the kind of, me and my mom kind of came up with it. Mm-hmm. Like, she was like, yeah, you need to talk to somebody. And I was like, yeah, maybe I need to fucking talk to someone.
And this is after you had taken some pills. She found you, right?
I believe I had run away from home. And then a few years
and
later.
How old were you?
When I ran away from home, I was in, like, middle school.
Okay.
And then in high school, I tried to kill myself. So, like, a few years later.
But when did you start going to therapy?
Right after I tried to kill myself. Okay. So I was like 15, 16 around then.
Well, were you at all skeptical of therapy when you first went?
No, I knew I needed it.
Really?
I knew I needed an outlet or I was going to lose my mind.
For me, I have such a hard time trusting medical professionals, though. You didn't have that problem?
No, I do. I'm not forthcoming immediately. Mm-hmm. I have to, like,
vet them.
Yeah, like, have to, like, talk to them, see what's up, kind of mm-hmm. get more of a vibe. You know, I ended up calling the suicide hotline a lot.
Before or after this happened?
Before.
What would you remember what you would say?
Yeah, I just, like, want to talk to someone. I was just, like, I'm so sad. I just want to kill myself. And they'd be like, well, you know. And they would just talk to you. And it was just nice. They would talk to
helpful.
You.
It was helpful.
Yeah, I highly recommend. You know, the suicide hotline, it doesn't get enough.
It's
I mean,
great.
It does. But it, like, it needs more awareness that, like, those people do the Lord's work in the sense that they just, they volunteer to listen to people. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, so, I don't know, it's very admirable. Because, like, I don't have the patience to hear someone about someone else's depression. I'm like, yeah, cool. Anyway. Yeah. I'm not that terrible, but, like, sometimes I
am. No, but it is exhausting.
Look, guys, if you knew me off the podcast,
no!
I am such trash.
No, she's not. She's a beautiful gem. So, when you first start going to therapy, do you remember, like, did you stick with that same therapist the whole time, or were you not happy at first? Like, you start to switch doctors or whatever, or were you just like, this is the person I'm gonna spill
for
to?
Most of my high school is just this woman I went to.
How did you find her?
She's just Kaiser. Mm-hmm. I just literally called. It was like, I need to make a therapy appointment. They assigned me. I said I wanted a woman, mm-hmm. and they assigned me a female doctor, and then I went in. And yeah,
do you remember liking her?
Yeah, she was great. She, you know, like, at first I felt she didn't fully understand. I mean, like, she was trying really hard to understand, like, the immigrant child parent dynamic.
She's white, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And then I finally brought my parents in to mm-hmm. a session.
With her suggestion or with your suggestion?
Her suggestion was like, yeah, bring your parents in. Let's see what's up. Yeah. Let's all talk. And it went so poorly on their end of my mom being like, crying is weakness. I tell her to be strong. I tell her not to cry. Yeah. My dad's just straight up like, I don't know, she's dramatic. I don't know. Whatever.
She's sensitive.
Yeah, she's always complaining about something. She's always like, wah, 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 crying and being like, wah, 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 which is like,
yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to make me look like a fool in front of a therapist? And then they left. And then, like, the next few sessions, like, she immediately, like, it was like she was able to just narrow in of like, yes, I get it. I understand. Yeah. I see literally physically how they treat you at home in the sense that your emotions aren't valid.
Yeah.
And that was, like, I think a very big turning point for I've had many turning points in my mm-hmm. life of how I emotionally and mentally.
Well, that must have been a big like oh, it's not just in my head.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Because she literally the next session was like, cry as much as you want. Mm-hmm. Crying is good. Crying is okay. And that's not really something that's ever been said to
me. Oh, never.
No.
Never.
They tell you it's in Iran, they tell you crying is ugly.
Yeah.
So you look ugly when you cry, which is never the way to deal with someone crying to tell them they look ugly.
That's the worst.
It's just the most insulting thing because it's like not only are you being emotional, but your emotions make you look bad.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's. That is never something that should be taught.
No, never.
Because your emotions are not bad. You're a human being.
Yeah.
If you were not supposed to have emotions, then you wouldn't have emotions. It's really that simple.
Yeah.
Like, some people don't, and they do very fucked up things because they can't feel empathy, and I don't ever want to be someone like that.
Yeah, of course not. You'd be a fucking sociopath. Or psychopath.
Which is why I brought you here today. Shireen, I am a sociopath.
No, you're not. But
I'm an emotional terrorist. I love that phrase. I don't know why. Just after we did a show with Sina Grace, and he was talking about some stuff, and he said emotional terrorist, and I was like, I am one.
I mean, it is a good way to describe a lot of emotional manipulation that goes on, you know? But when you were talking to this therapist early on, were you more honest with her with your emotions or like your ways of coping with emotions, whether that was like using pills or like using like other kinds of drugs or whatever? Were you honest with her about everything?
I was more honest at that point. I was more honest with my emotions and not how I was coping because I didn't want to tell her I was like abusing drugs.
But did you know that you were abusing them or were you just like in denial?
I was fully aware. She also told me she would not get me a psychiatrist until I stopped smoking weed, and I lied to her and told her I stopped smoking weed so I could see a psychiatrist. Because in the end, I was like, well, that's not really going to matter. It's not like I smoke enough weed. I was in high school. It's like, I don't carry a ton of weed on me. I'm like young and I have to live at my parents' house. Like, yeah, I have like small amounts, like dime bags or like, you know, dub sacks of weed, but like not enough for me to be like aggressively smoking all day to fuck up my medication.
Right.
And of course, everyone is different. Everyone reacts differently to everything. Some people could have their medication fucked with if they smoked weed, but I just wasn't that person. So like,
were you smoking every day?
No, not really, because of course, I was like smoking with my friends like recreationally, but like I also lived at my parents' house, so like, you know, I had one friend I lived in a neighborhood where like all the kids were friends, so like they're all my homies. Like I'm going home for the holidays, and I'll hang out with all the same people that I was smoking weed with, literally. That's funny because one of my friends texted me this morning like, hey, you want to meet at the park when we're home and smoke some weed? And it's like really funny because like now we could do it in our parents' backyards because our parents just don't fuck with like 30-year-olds doing their thing in the backyard. Yeah. But like, I was like, yeah, dude, I'll bring the bottle of Smirnoff Ice for us to swig off of.
Yeah, be low key.
Yeah. But there was just, you know, a neighborhood vibe where I could like just meet up at the park with friends, like smoke some weed. I would always tell my parents, I'm just going on a walk because my parents, they're old immigrant people. So they love walks.
Oh, they love walks.
Yeah. So I was allowed to go walk with my friends, but I was just smoking weed at the park, literally like across the street from our house. But they just like were none the wiser, or
they never smelled it on you.
Oh, yeah. I would get in trouble all the time. If I came home and I was just being too funny, my dad would be like, are you high? And I'd be like, yeah. I didn't say that. I'd be like, no, I'm just having fun.
I'm just happy.
And I'd just be like stoned and making jokes. And my dad would be like, you're being too cheery. I'd be like, yeah, I'm high
all
as
emotions
fuck,
are
bro.
Bad, not just sad ones.
Yeah. High as fuck, bro.
So when did you realize, so you were smoking recreationally, but at that time were you also using pills recreationally?
Yeah.
Like, can you tell me, like, take me through a day?
So I would steal the pills from my dad, who had a lot of Vicodin and Oxy, because he hurt his back. He slipped a disc when I was late middle school, early high school. And so he was prescribed a bunch of painkillers because he chose not to have surgery because there was not 100% chance that the surgery would be successful.
Okay.
So he's like, well, I'm just going to live my life with this and figure out how to do it else other ways, which was just like working out, stretching. And now he only sleeps on the floor. Beds aren't comfortable for him.
He has to be like on a flat surface.
Yeah. That's why he's always asleep different places on the ground. And you're like, get up. You're in the way. But
people trip over him.
He's just always on the ground. Yeah, I was stealing his Vicodin, so I'd either sell some of it sometimes to like have like cash, or because other high school kids were all trash, and you know at this point I was living in kind of like a white affluent community, because my parents moved us there from the Bay Area to try and get us away from drugs. Stupid. Backfire.
Right.
I was like, yeah, bring us to a rich town where all the kids have nothing to do and just want to do drugs.
And they'll buy all my drugs.
Yeah, they all have money. So I, you know, I would just like take some Vicodin in the morning and just be like high as fuck in my English class. Mr. Holst.
Well, can you describe what it's like to take Vicodin
in the
morning?
It's just like a euphoric high. It's not necessary. I was just always like kind of like chill.
Yeah.
I didn't really participate in class much.
But was it obvious that you were on something, you think?
I don't think so. I wasn't like, like slurring my words. I was just quiet and high. Yeah. Like, just like,
oh, she's a quiet kid.
Yeah. Like, but it's also like first period, so no one really thinks anything of you.
Everyone's groggy.
Yeah. We're all like high school students who are like pissed off.
Yeah.
So no one really.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone was really paying attention. I also like was kind of not that out about my drug use. So like even my closest of friends weren't fully aware I was taking drugs that early in the morning. Like I would just pop some fucking pills in the morning and just be sitting in class.
Yeah.
Just chilling. Now when I think about it, like, Jesus, that was ballsy. They could at any second been like, why are you being so weird? Go to the principal office and then call my parents and be like, she seems high. But they never did because I don't know.
It's high school.
Yeah.
Kids are weird.
Yeah. We're just
being kids. Mm-hmm. Being groggy kids. But so you would take them in the morning. Would you take any more during the day?
I think it depended on my day. I think, I would take like 2 in the morning and then see how long that lasted me. And then, you know, it's not clear how much more I would take that day because I don't remember.
Right.
I don't really remember. My days were always like, there are a few years in my sophomore year of high school was real. Not my sophomore. My junior year of high school was really bad. Mm-hmm. I was a very poor student. And that was like the year that really counted. Like people would be like, you have senioritis a year too early. And I'd be like, I'm on pills.
But you know it's a problem, I feel like, when even your closest friends weren't aware.
Well, and I just like wasn't making it too. Like I knew it was not okay for me to be taking these in the morning before school. But I also just didn't care.
And your dad never noticed?
He would notice occasionally.
He
would comment about it, and I would be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I would just deny it.
Yeah.
Because that was...
He never confronted you about it, other than, like, making a comment.
He would. He would confront me about it, but I also denied it, and he also was on them, so he kind of would just give up.
Yeah.
Like, it was nothing I'd ever admit to him.
Mm-hmm. Well, when did you... Because when you went to therapy, you weren't being honest about that drug use, and so when were you honest with someone else about it? Do you remember telling, like, a friend or, like, any kind of, like, other person about, like, hey, I think I have a problem with taking these pills?
I think college, I was more open about it.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like, just so you know, I'm, like, taking pills. Like, I'd rather take a pill. I'd always said I'd rather take one pill than drink a full beer.
Well.
But then I would do both. And then in college, it became a real problem with Xanax. Xanax became a really big problem in my life because I was taking it way too much. I had no memory of anything.
Whoa.
Because when you take Xanax and you drink, it completely erases your memory. So you could literally just be sitting on the couch watching TV all night. You'll wake up the next morning and be like, what the fuck happened? What happened? What did I do?
Yeah.
And you won't know. And then you slowly remember like, oh, I didn't do anything. I was just sitting on the couch drinking a beer and I took a Xanax. And that is like.
Was that appealing to you, like not remembering anything? Or like, was it like...
No, I hated that because that makes you feel so... That's what makes you feel like a drug addict when you can't remember anything. That's when you start to be like, oh, I'm fucking my life up. That's when I would be like, oh, I went out to dinner with friends, took a Xanax, drank a beer, and all of a sudden like lost a bunch of things, but I didn't even party. Like I was just at dinner, but I was so fucked up off Xanax and like alcohol. All I was doing was just having conversations with people. Yeah. But then I left like my beanie and my purse at the restaurant.
Right.
That's a real thing that happened when I, I had to like go back and be like, the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
So those were like, that's when I really started to be like, this is shady.
Did any of your friends ever like ask you about it?
Oh,
or,
people would comment and shit.
But did you ever take them seriously?
No, because I liked it too much. You didn't get it. Yeah. I mean, like people would comment, be like, yeah, I know it's an issue, but don't worry, it's not going to get worse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was always self-aware enough to know that I couldn't take it. I knew I had to stop, but it was always like a process of being like, I'll stop eventually when I start to feel better. But it's like, you can't ever really feel better because those fucking drugs destroy your like dopamine and your serotonin.
Yeah.
So your neurotransmitters are always so low that you're like searching for this high the whole time. And it's like a never ending cycle, which is why you have to break out of it.
Yeah. Well, during this time, were you seeing a psychiatrist?
Yes, I was.
And were you being...
But I only saw a psychiatrist like once a month.
Right.
just to check in.
But was she prescribing you any other medications?
Yeah, I was. She was prescribing me Xanax, which mm-hmm. was her downfall. And I was on Celexa, which was an mm-hmm. antidepressant. And I was also on Ambien, which was to sleep.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't sleeping.
Yeah. So that happened to me, too. I had to take sleeping pills. Yeah. I still take them because I'm, like, terrified of not having insomnia again.
I think another thing is I was also... I think I was abusing all these drugs also to sleep in a way. Like, yeah. I was just trying to... But then, you know, once she gave me the Ambien, I wasn't fucking taking the Ambien at the right time.
Right.
I was fucking high on Ambien mm-hmm. during the day because I knew it could fuck me up if I stayed awake on
yeah.
it. So that was always a problem. It's like, I was realizing that I wasn't the person who wouldn't abuse medication.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to be like, yo, you want to be on antidepressants, but look at you fucking abusing fucking Ambien and abusing yeah. your Xanax. Like, you don't know how to not abuse drugs.
I think it's really terrifying realizing this true nature of yourself, because I realize that about myself, too. Like, I am someone that will become addicted to something and just abuse it over and over yeah. and over again. And I think coming to terms with that and being like, I have to stop is so much harder than it is, whether it's about pills or food or any type of, like, self-harm activity. But,
I mean, unfortunately, I'm that way to this day. Like, I remember yeah. I put on a vest around, like, early spring this year. I put on a vest I hadn't worn in a while, mm-hmm. and I found 2 Valium in the pocket.
Oh, my God.
It's fucking random. Like, I was like, what? That's always how it goes. You're like, why the fuck is there Valium in the pocket yeah. of my fucking thing? You know I took that shit that night. Like, I was really like, well, I mean, it's just 2. It's not like, yeah. I don't know. So, I mean, of course, I had a nice sleep that night. Took some Valium and was chilling. But, like, yeah. that's the problem. It's like, yeah. I cannot put myself in these situations.
I feel like there's an element of, like, self-destruction and self-sabotage that's so true. Evident, you know?
But I just love, I think my thing is more than anything, I love being high.
But does that mean you dislike being sober?
Yes. I mean, sober's fine. But the thing is, it's not that I don't like being drunk.
Yeah.
Drunk is a whole different thing.
I find being drunk
just annoying.
Because
then you're just sick in the morning. Or depends on your body type. But, like, I don't like drinking that much because also I'm a really shitty person when I'm really, really blacked out drunk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's also because your dad would drink when you were younger and you just got annoyed by it?
No, because my dad drinking, because my dad's not a crazy drunk. He's, like, crazy, but he's, like, more fun.
Uh-huh.
I like him more when he's drunk. He's a little bit just chill.
Yeah.
In the sense, like, he's not, like, angry at you.
Right.
But I just don't like that feeling of being drunk.
Yeah.
And, like, it always goes back, I'd rather take a pill than drink a full beer.
I mean, I'm the same. I don't really
the
drink.
Highness that I get, like, the euphoric highness that I get from, like, hard drugs is more entertaining to me than alcohol.
Yeah.
I enjoy that more.
No, I relate to that for sure.
Alcohol's fine, but whatever.
I don't really drink. I would rather get high.
Like, alcohol, you have to keep drinking.
Yeah.
Fucking pill, it can last you.
And for me, like, coming from someone that had an eating disorder, I'm like, well, those are extra carbs I don't need. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't care for it.
Yeah. But so when you were in college, you were still abusing these drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, eventually I will stop. And actually, before we get too much into it, I just got the clock, and we're going to take a quick commercial break. And we're back. I was going to ask, so you told yourself that eventually you wanted to stop. What was, like, the breaking point, or, like, I'm assuming there were, like, a couple of nights or, like, mornings where you were like, this has gone out of hand.
It was in L.A.
Really?
I stopped doing drugs, like, two to three almost years that I'd been living in L.A.
Okay.
I really stopped abusing pills, basically. I got a bunch of Oxy. Someone gave me a shit ton of Oxy, which I was just floating through.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, literally someone gifted me Oxy. That's how, like, shady my friends can be sometimes.
Like,
but I think
enablers.
They were not aware
of the degree of
that I would, like,
doing.
Be taking at minimum 2 a day for the next, like, few weeks, for how long it lasts. I was given some Oxy, and then...
But when it ran out, were you...
Oh, it was the fucking worst. The withdrawals off Oxy are... just the worst feeling. You're just fucked.
Yeah.
For those 2 days, you're just, you can't sleep because you're either cold or hot. You go back and forth nonstop. You're either sweating or you're freezing, which is, like, fuck off. Mm-hmm. It's the worst feelings in the world when you're trying to sleep. You just can't find a comfortable position. You almost have like never-ending restless leg syndrome. Mm-hmm. That's the worst. So I always knew, like, you don't, I never want to go through that, but I always put myself in the position to end up going through that.
But were you like, were you looking for more oxy to like?
No.
No.
I knew better.
Yeah.
That's when I kind of was like, don't. Because that's when you end up like leaning towards heroin, mm-hmm. you know, because it's cheaper and easier to get.
Yeah.
And so I was like, be cool.
Yeah.
Don't fucking end up on that path. And I almost did. There was many times where I was like, fuck, like, I'll just smoke heroin, which I had done in early college.
You had done multiple times or just the once?
That was a few times I just smoked it. I never injected it. I never liked needles
really,
enough to.
That's really terrifying to me.
Because you're not, it's the worst thing you can possibly fucking do.
I know once I do, not like as if it'll eventually happen, but I'm terrified of heroin because I know I will never stop once I start it.
It's not something you want to fuck with.
Yeah.
I think I knew right away. I was like, this is bigger than me and you will succumb to it, because I already knew I was so capable of succumbing to it that I had to really stay away from it. It was bad. It was like really bad.
Yeah. And it's weird because I see you as someone with a lot of self-control. I see myself as someone with a lot of self-control, but there's something about like this addictive like temptation that I feel like is so unavoidable. I don't know why. And I say that I think you have self-control because when we started getting closer in LA, I remember I was going on and off medication constantly because I'm also have my own issues. But you told me at one point, like, you don't take anything because you it's just better for you that way. And I realized, like, you would supplement with other things, whether it was working out or going to therapy. And because you consciously make a decision to not take any pills, whether they're for antidepressants or anti-anxiety or whatever, you have no choice if you want to stay an active participant in society to supplement with other things. Right. And I thought that was so, I think it's cliche to say brave, but it is brave, and it is something that I really admired about you, because I don't know if I could have done that at that time, or even now. I'm still dependent on a lot of pills.
But that was also because I'm an abuser.
Yeah.
I'm a pill abuser, and also it wasn't working for me.
Yeah.
So I wasn't feeling better necessarily on the antidepressants. And that was kind of a thing my therapist told me, like, you know, it's not 100% that it'll work for you.
Mm-hmm.
Might not work for you.
And I'm sure you, just like me, had taken so many different kinds.
Yeah, well, because once they tell you, you know, I talked about this before, like, they tell you, okay, we'll add this to try it on.
Yeah.
I did that a few times, and mm-hmm. I was like, I'm a fucking pill popper.
Yeah.
You can't keep adding these pills to me.
Were they aware of that when they would prescribe pills to you?
No, because, well, so in high school, I was arrested.
Oh, yes.
Not high school. In college, I was arrested.
Tell me about this.
So my senior year of college, I was pulled over for what they said was my brake lights were too bright. It was a whole thing. But it was like 3 a.m. And I had two glasses of wine,
mm-hmm.
which... whatever.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't like to drink, so it's kind of like silly that they were like trying to get me on a DUI basically, because they were like, had you drank? And I was like, yeah, I had some glasses of wine. And they're like, okay, well, you need to do field sobriety test, DUI test, whatever those things are called, when they make you like walk around and do weird shit. And I don't know if I passed that or not. I think it was also because it was 4 a.m. I was like, or 3 or 4 a.m, somewhere around there. Like, I was tired.
Mm-hmm.
But I blew exactly like right at the limit, like 0.08.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was kind of like, fucking stupid.
Right.
But because of that, he's like, well, I have to arrest you and take you in. And I was like, oh, fucking stupid. Like, I'm not really drunk.
Yeah.
Like, I'm barely buzzed, if that. But I had a ton of drugs in my car.
Mm-hmm.
So in my car, I had acid. I had Xanax. I had a half pound of weed.
How much of the
half
one?
Ounce, not a half pound. That's way too much
weed.
Yeah,
I was like, that's
shit.
A lot of fucking weed.
No. Half ounce. Jesus Christ.
Well, how much acid and Xanax did you have?
I had like 10 hits of acid. I had a good amount of Xanax and I had a good amount of Ambien. But I didn't have my prescriptions on me. Like, they were in the prescription bottle to my name on them.
Right.
But it's not like...
they can be anything.
Yeah, they were like, what are these? And so, you know, I got arrested and they made me go take a blood test because he assumed I was on all of this. Which
mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm not. I'm like, literally, I'm wearing pajamas. I was just at a friend's house.
Right.
And so he took me in. He took me a blood test, which I think in the end came back negative. But because of that, so I didn't end up getting a DUI because I was sober by the time they took got me to the drunk tank.
Well, that's fucking lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they tried to charge me with a DUI, but
also hilarious on their part, though. Like, if you weren't drunk enough to still be drunk by the time you had a car ride, then it's just arresting you.
Well, I mean, it was just like wine. It was right. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
But I guess I should have waited like literally 2 minutes before driving and I would have been fine.
Yeah.
But that got weird. So I got to the drunk tank and I'm like, when can I get out? They were like, when you're sober. And I was like, okay. And then they blew me. They're like, well, you have to wait till you're processed.
Right.
And I was like, fucking whatever. And so, yeah, but they, you know, took all my drugs and that got filed away as like having like drugs on me. And so when my court case came eventually, like, my DUI got knocked down to wet and reckless. And then, but I got charged heavily with drugs, like having drugs on me. I didn't save my fucking ass. I didn't get like the intent to distribute shit. But because of that, I got court ordered. I had to do 6 months of classes. I had to do 6 months of Narcotics Anonymous and 6 months of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I had to go to those, and every time I had to get them signed.
Right.
So
what were your experiences in those classes?
The DUI, like, wet and reckless classes or whatever were fine. Like, you just go, and then they would put on it was like 2 hours at night in Culver City, and they would put on, like, and it was funny because it was just filled with, like, actors who were like,
yeah,
this is my second DUI, which I was like,
so you got arrested in
Davis.
Like, Davis,
but it took so long for my case to originally come around.
So
I was already living in LA
here
by that point.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like flying up for one night to go to court.
Right.
So yeah, the classes are so silly because they're just the silliest characters of people in there. And everyone thought I was so crazy because they had found acid and all this stuff in my car. And I was like, no, dude, like, that's just a fucking...
Yeah.
I wasn't on any of that shit. I just had it because I enjoy my recreational drug usage. But whatever. So that kind of put me in a position where I had to legally tell the people prescribing me medication, like, what...
Mm-hmm.
I was up to. So by that point, though, I was deciding, like, by the time I was taking classes, and around then the same thing happened where I was interviewing for some new jobs in LA area, because I was like trying to get out of like the shitty PA work I was doing at the time. I missed like two different interviews because I overslept because I had taken too much Xanax the night before.
Fuck.
And that was two, like, literally, like, 2 weeks in a row. Like, it was just, it was mad. Like, I was just like, ah, fuck. And I knew, like, my court case was coming up.
Right.
And I had to deal with all this shit. And I was just, like, fucking up missing interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I couldn't. And then I got, like, really sick. It was just, like, all this bad shit happened when I was like, oh, fuck, I need to just clean my shit up. And so I, for the most part, while I was taking those classes and going through NA and AA, I was sober. Except for, like, weed. I was still smoking weed through all this. So that was, like, a big turning point when I was like, oh, I gotta stop being such a shady piece of shit. I think that was, like, kind of... After my court case, and I would just go to NA. NA was fucking fascinating because people would just basically tell you where to get drugs. Like,
wait, seriously?
Not even like literally, but like the way, because they'd tell their side of the story and how they would get it and where they would go. And there's so many details where you're like, oh, wow, really?
Yeah, like under the train tracks?
Yeah, like,
around the corner?
There was one guy who was like, he got pulled over. His like daughter was in the car when he was drunk. So it was like this whole thing. But he's like, yeah, you know, I went to Norway and I hired the like, you know, the village people to take me up to the top of this mountain to find this one mushroom. It has the red dot on top. And
oh,
that's
my God.
The one you eat and you trip so hard. And I was like, what's that? Sorry, where did you go? Like, writing it down. Like, that's fucking crazy, dude. Yeah, it was a very interesting experience.
Do you think it was beneficial at all for you?
Yeah. I mean, I saw where my life could end up because mm-hmm. there were some people who were really bad and then some people who were like me who were just kind of like,
got
to get through it for the courts, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I thought it was also very interesting to see it in L.A. where there was such a diverse group of people. And it was mm-hmm. like half of them were actors who were like, I need to get my life back together.
Yeah.
And another half were just like regular people or just, you know, people of color. It's like such a wide, diverse group of people. It was kind of an amazing thing, like mm-hmm. these people to get to
a
know
character study.
Yeah, it was very fascinating to me.
Do you feel like it was kind of like a wake-up call because you realized like, oh, I could be way worse?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that was like
those few months was like a huge wake-up call for me where I was like,
was that another turning point in your life?
Mm-hmm. It sucked. I was like in a really shitty place mentally too, so I was like, yo, I gotta get off. And I was like literally telling my psychiatrist, like, can't do it anymore. Like, it doesn't help. I'm done with this shit. I'm not taking pills anymore. I'm going straight for the workout every day. Mm-hmm. And I bought a like stationary bike.
Yeah.
And then that was it.
How did that start though? It must have been really hard in the beginning to like get on the bike every day and be like, this is my new medicine and like all this other stuff.
You know, it actually wasn't that hard. I was very motivated.
That's awesome.
I started out very motivated. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it became so aggressively a part of my like regime that I couldn't not. Like if I didn't work out that day, I would feel very shitty. Like I would just be like, I have to work out.
Well, that's like another part
I would
of
do like
though.
48 minute. I had a 48 minute ride plan right. on my bike that I would do every day.
I mean, it's impressive.
It made me late to a lot of things because sometimes I'd be like, I'm sorry, like I have to get the ride in before I go out tonight. To like a lot of my shows, my live shows, because I was like, if you want me to be a good fucking producer tonight, I need to get my ride in to get my fucking aggression and shit out.
I mean, that's really helpful to get that out physically too, because
endorphins
are a real thing, you know?
Oh, they are. It was so important to my sanity.
Yeah. And you were still going to therapy during this time?
This time, yes, I'm in therapy.
During, like, when you first got the stationary bike and, like, all that stuff.
Yeah, I was still in therapy. Because they were, like, also, like, if you're not going to fucking take any medication, mm-hmm. you might as well keep talking to people.
And were you convinced that, like, because I feel like if it was me, I would almost be like, I'm going to try this out, but if it doesn't work, I'll go back on pills. Were you like that, or were you just like, no, I'm done forever?
I think I just knew I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Not really my thing.
Were your parents aware?
Well, it is too much my thing, so I can't be on that thing.
Were your parents aware of what was going on?
No, because my parents are just blissfully ignorant about a lot of things. That's just how they are. They
even,
choose
even when
not
you had
to
a
dive
court date and
deep.
Stuff?
Oh, no, they knew all about that.
Yeah. What did they say to you when that happened?
No, I mean, they were just like, don't fuck your life up.
Yeah.
Because I also, another thing was I could not drink for 6 months.
Okay.
That's what the court said, which I was like, whatever. It's like, I don't really want to drink anyway.
Yeah.
So that was, they knew. They were aware of the court case because it's hard to hide a court case.
Right, yeah.
Because I'm like flying up and they're like, what are you doing here? Nothing. Also, my dad helped me hire the lawyer. Like, it was basically his lawyer who stepped in to help me.
Wow.
So.
When your parents found out about, like, the drug use, though, and, like, the having drugs in your car or whatever, when did your dad...
I don't think they ever heard about that.
They never?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I never told them, and I don't... They never came to court with me,
so...
Okay.
It was just, like, something...
And I don't think my lawyer told them details.
I mean, that would be against the rules, right?
I don't even know. Well, my dad, like, technically hired him, and then I had to give money to my dad. So he could technically have told him, but I don't think he cared enough to tell him. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't... Like, my parents weren't that, like, well, what was it? You know? Like, they didn't... I think they knew there was weed in my car, but I didn't tell them anything else.
Do your parents know that you're, like, basically sober for the most part now?
I don't know what they know. We don't talk about it.
Really? They don't ask?
No.
Wow.
They know I smoke weed, but they don't ask about, like, alcohol. They know I don't necessarily like drinking alcohol, but they don't.
But has your mom ever, since after finding you as a teenager with pills, has she's never, like, followed up about it? Or...
She always just generally oversweeping, don't take any drugs. Drugs will ruin your life. Don't take anything that can kill you. Mm-hmm. It's always an oversweeping. There's never any direct conversation about it. She just always says, don't take, or she'll always be like, don't take, like, if I'm going on a trip, like, don't take anything that can get you in trouble. Mm-hmm. It was just, like, drugs. Like, don't get caught up with drugs somewhere.
My parents like saying, be smart.
Yeah.
Just as an overarching thing. Like, don't do the stupid things you do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is also, like, I know better than to, I mean, sometimes I don't, but for the most part, I know better.
Yeah. How are you coping with things now? Because it's been a couple of years since you've started this, like, new way of dealing with your emotions.
Like 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, 4 years. I'm fine. I mean, I still have my days. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily get to work out every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my life has gotten so busy with, like, having a full-time job that, like, most of my workouts is, like, I go on, like, walks 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
I had a bike, a new exercise bike, but I killed it in a year. I went too hard on it.
Because you were doing it too much.
Yeah, I was doing, like, 50 minutes a day this workout bike, watching only Detroiters. I fucking love Detroiters. I just watched Detroiters and workout and fucked my bike up. The fucking wheels or the pads came off. Yeah, so I'm saving... Well, it's a whole thing, but I'm trying to save up in Amazon gift cards to buy a new one, and I think I'm almost there.
You're almost there.
Because, you know,
you shot Christmas, I got gifted bonus.
One.
Yeah.
I got a gift one for Christmas. I have one for my my credit card rewards. After I get a certain amount of points, I can cash them in for gift cards.
We're almost there.
So I'm, like, saving up to buy a nice one that I know if I put more money in, it won't just, like, break when I'm, like, fucking riding it too hard.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm saving up to that. I want to hear more about this bike, honestly, after a quick commercial break. We're back. I have a question that maybe is, like, annoying, but, like, do you think, because for me, when I had an eating disorder that was really bad and I started working out, like, really heavily, I realized, like, my addictive personality had made working out another part of my addiction. Like, I was doing it too hard. I was losing too much weight. I wasn't supplementing it with anything else. Do you think a part of the stage, this need,
because
it was like you're just saying you relate to things, you were saying like you would be angry if you didn't do it.
It's 100% another addiction,
yeah.
But it's a good addiction,
but it's
I'm not that worried about it.
Yeah, it's like being addicted to like eating healthy or some shit.
Yes.
Yeah,
just like I'm kind of addicted to keto right now.
I think like low-key you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm addicted to the losing of the weight.
Uh-huh.
I'm addicted to feeling better. I'm addicted to the energy I get.
Yeah,
I'm just overall addicted to everything.
Yeah.
So I'm also addicted to not eating poorly anymore. It's like a weird thing. But yes, no, it became a thing where I was like, I could kind of be a dick if I didn't do it that day. And it's just because like, it's not like I was going through withdrawals, but I kind of was. Like I needed my workout.
Yeah. I think that's what scares me sometimes about working out too much is that I'm worried that I'll go back into the person that I was when I was working out too much. And thinking I was so healthy, but really the least healthy I ever was.
Yeah.
And I think my past experience with my like addictive personality has made me so fearful of a lot of things that I like because I'm just like I can't do this all the time.
Yeah.
But do you feel when you're in social situations where people are smoking or people are like doing some type of recreational thing, do you feel at all tempted still?
No.
Really?
I'm not.
Were you tempted before?
Because
I know a lot of some of your friends are pretty like I don't know. Like
they like to party.
Yeah, they like to party.
Don't name names.
I'm not going to say anything. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, no. My friends are... Okay. I have a lot of friends who party. They're crazy people. They don't choose to acknowledge their limits.
Yeah. They're very drug savvy and they know how to get... like.
Yeah, they have their networks
to
make things happen for themselves, which has made my... drug use easier in my my whole life has I've been able to easily access things because of whatever. Not that my friends are bad people, they just
have their own problems.
Everyone has their own problems, so
but do you think being in that environment
I mean it's not always great, but I've built up enough I think to not get too tempted by it.
Do they respect that or are they still do they pressure you at all?
It depends on the person. Sometimes they pressure you.
But is it annoying though?
I don't think it's that annoying because I know they just want to have, they want me to have fun with them. And in a weird way, it's them just needing someone to acknowledge. Like, you know, like if you're doing it with them, then it's not bad. But if they're doing it by themselves and I'm sitting there being like, oh, no, sorry, then they feel worse because they're like, oh, well, then I look like a shithead because I'm just sitting here like whatever, doing whatever.
Yeah.
But look, it's not hard to get me to do certain drugs like acid. I've never had a problem. Like, I'm not addicted to acid, but it is truly one of my favorite drugs.
Yeah, same.
Like, I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I love acid. I love shrooms.
Yeah,
shrooms
so like psychedelics, you could get me to do psychedelics this weekend if you asked. Like,
let's,
I don't care.
Do
I have to go for the holiday shrink.
I mean, I do too. It was more of a joke.
Pressure me.
It was more of a joke.
Do you see this? You witness shrink, pressure me.
No, but we should have an episode where we talk about doing drugs together because you've done drugs with me a couple times. But I do love psychedelics a lot.
Yeah, those I find more therapeutic than anything.
Yeah, same.
I always said, like, I learned so much more about myself in those moments.
Me too. It's like self growth in a little experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You kind of just have thoughts where you're like, oh.
Like your mind just like literally explodes.
You just, you'll literally live through like 10 different lives in 2 minutes and everyone's like, are you okay? You're like, yeah. Yeah, no prob.
Psychedelics are really, when they're done in a safe environment, I think they're so mind opening and beneficial.
And when you're with people you truly trust and are comfortable with, it's a very,
well, that's
it can be
why
a very
I did it
powerful
with you,
experience.
The first time. The first time I did acid was with you.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I trusted you.
Yeah, I took you through the beach.
Yeah. We'll talk about that another time, I think. But
that's comedy ensues for sure.
What do you mean?
When we took acid
together. Oh yeah, that was great.
Truly the most absurd day.
No, because I was like so, for whatever reason, I was like, I want to see the sunset on acid. And
right.
So like my goal was to like go to the beach on acid. And then like
and take
just remember like I just remember you parked your car somewhere and we were like speed walking towards the beach, like Venice.
You were
beach.
Speed walking and I was just trying to keep up.
Oh, because I was like,
that.
I want to see this.
I was being like, shit, Shireen! Like, don't let Shireen go by herself.
No, because I had felt it kicking in and I was like, oh, fuck, it's almost sunset. And I was like, speed walking.
I remember you were running and I was just, because I had some other friends with me and I had to be like,
and I was
sorry,
like, fuck
I have to ditch you to make sure my friend is cool because you guys know what you're doing and that's her first time and I'm going to go with her because she's like, darting in that direction, so peace, good luck.
And
they were all like, Anna, why are you leaving? I was like, dude, I gotta go by, like ran after you. And then,
oh,
do you remember,
man,
when I got mean girl that night by like a college kid?
Oh my god, that was ridiculous.
A
we
girl
were like on a,
like
we were
made
on stairs,
fun of
right
me, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah,
it wasn't even like hurtful, it was more just fascinating that a girl was like, you were like, because we were older at that point. And we were like watching like a younger version.
We were in a college part of town.
We were in like Westwood near UCLA.
Yeah.
And there's this girl just like made a mean comment to me. And it was so, because we were like so high that it was more hilarious than anything else. Because we were just like, that girl's a mean girl. Wow.
I don't remember us being hurt by it. I remember us being like, the fuck just happened?
Yeah, we were like, that was fascinating. That girl's just, she's just a mean girl. She just is mean to people for no reason. And we're like, wow.
Because at one point, I think at that point, we were sitting on these stairs that
were
like looking at
stoop people.
We were on the stoop. We were on the stoop.
We were having a chill out on a stoop.
I mean, I guess maybe that's the silver lining of you going through all this experience with drugs and like the good and the bad has made you someone that when I think of like, I, the first person I thought of when like, I was like, I want my first experience to be with someone I trust, and that's Anna. Like,
right.
Isn't that crazy? Like, and at that point, I don't think you had really opened up to me about your drug use. I just thought you were just like savvy about it. And I think it was a couple, like maybe a year later that I realized like, oh, you have a lot of backstory
that comes with it.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the reality of it. If you do enough drugs, you're gonna have like the experiences, like, you know, like I remember one time in college, this is a legendary story within my friends, which is so dark because everyone always references it and I'm like, guys, that was fucked up. But I went to a potluck, Allison Stevenson's potluck.
Mm-hmm. she's been on the guest show
because we went to college together, and I took acid, I took Xanax, and I drank gallons of vodka.
Oh no.
So on top of being so when you're on acid, you can drink endlessly because
really?
You're so hyper aware of everything. So you don't really black out. But if you mix it with Xanax, you will black out, but you'll still be standing. So it's a horrible combination.
No.
I never, ever want any of you to do that combination. It is so bad.
Oh.
So fun. No, I'm joking. It's just how I was at that time. I knew I could handle it, so I was always experimenting with things I shouldn't be doing. Yeah. Because I just almost... There would literally be days where I would think, how have I not overdosed yet?
Right.
It's insane the things I put in my body. So I took... Xanax, I took acid, and I was drinking endless liquor. And I guess... none of this I really remember. There's a point when I come back to. So I'm at the potluck.
Mm-hmm. This is all based on someone else telling you.
Yes. Yeah, so I remember... Okay. And then apparently I leave the potluck with friends. I help a friend. We're biking because we were in Davis. It's a bike town, so we bike everywhere. So it's like, I shouldn't even have been biking. I was so fucked up. I could have easily just been hit by a car or anything. Yeah. But because I was on acid, I was like super aware of everything. I just have no memory. But a friend apparently drinks too much and he falls off his bike. And we apparently had to walk him back to his place.
Okay.
And then we went to a friend's place. And then we went to the apartment complex across the street from my friend's place. Went swimming. No memory of that. Came back to his place. Me and another friend decided we wanted to climb onto the roof to watch the sunset. Or sunrise. Because it was like so late in the day. During this, I somehow like trip or somehow fall off the roof of the house. And hit the ground. And apparently get back up. And I'm like, what the fuck? Everyone is apparently like, whoa, no! In a full panic.
Oh, my God.
I don't think anything of it. They're like, go lay down, even though they really shouldn't have. Because I just fallen, like, hit my head, basically. And then it ends with me, like, waking up later that day being like, what happened? And everyone being like, you've had a rough night. And me being like, okay. And not thinking, going home, taking my clothes off, the whole side of my body is completely bruised.
Oh, I'd
like
my
fallen
God.
On my side. There was a bruise. So like from my like feet up to my shoulder, like under my shoulder, my like God. To my boot is all bruised. And I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. I remember going to the doctor that day.
Oh no.
And being like, yeah, I fell off a roof. My doctor being like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Are you okay? You need x-rays. I was like, I think I'm fine. And he's like, all right, what the fuck? I remember him being so pissed at me. Just like, who just walks in here and is like, yeah, fell off a roof. Just right. Like normal appointment. And then that night, I just went home and I hung out with friends and they gave me their Vicodin because I was just like in some physical, just like achy pain. Took some Vicodin, hung out. The next day, there's photos of me doing keg stands and my shirt is riding up and you can see my entire bruised side of like fresh bruised side of my body.
The day after Anna?
Yeah. Yeah. That's like the level of like, oh boy,
you cannot
you are
slow
out
down.
Of control. Yeah. Like, yeah, I couldn't slow down. I was just like, all right, well, fell off roof, no big deal. All right, keg stands, woo, gotta finish that keg, you know?
Like, and this is someone that doesn't even like to drink that much.
No, but at that point, I was getting fucked up. I was getting faded a lot.
Yeah.
I was getting faded a lot.
Damn. Do you have a picture of that somewhere?
Yeah, I do actually have that picture somewhere. I'll find it for you.
Okay, when we're done with this, I'll show you pictures of my baby head. Mm-hmm. That's mute. That's the tongs. That's tongs, and you'll show me pictures.
And
of
I probably won't post this photo because it's just alarming. If you see the bruises, it's so alarming. I know I've posted
none
it
of
on
y'all
my
are
own.
Seeing my baby pictures. I'm not posting those ever. I look like a demonic version of myself.
A little dent baby head.
Yeah, a little weird baby. I'm sure like, I was a cute great. Toddler. I was not a cute baby.
Because your head.
Yeah.
Look, those tongs did a number on you.
Some babies are cute. I was not. But I was a very cute toddler. I will say that.
No, I've seen pics.
Yeah.
That one of you on the merry-go-round thing. So cute.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Anna. I want... You mentioned you wanted to make this short, but I have questions if you still want to go.
Shoot. No, I'm not that terrible.
Do you like I don't know. I'm are you ever worried like that some of these addictive habits, whether it's like keto or bicycling or whatever, are you ever fearful that your personality will latch onto something negative again?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
I just have to be.
How much does that occupy your mind?
Not at all. I don't think about it too often, but I know it's a possibility.
Yeah. Because I feel like...
I compartmentalize aggressively.
Are you someone that has anxiety or just depression?
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot.
How does this anxiety manifest, you think?
Just every day I feel it in my body.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just stressed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also do, which is, I think, huge for me, is I have a ton of Xanax at my house that I have for truly, like, just panic attacks.
Yeah.
Because I still have those.
Well, how do you restrain yourself and not use them regularly? Because you said to use the Valium that you found immediately that night.
Yeah, I think Valium is different because it was just that two, and I was like, well, it's not like it's whatever. But like the Xanax, because I have so much of it, I just know not to touch it. There's a part of me, I think I've taken all the Xanax I can handle in my life. Like I've taken a lot in my day. Or in my college days, it was Xanax abuse central. And I think like from like taking pills to just snorting it, like just all over the place, you know? I think I kind of out-Xanaxed myself.
Wow.
Like, I don't have an interest in taking it unless I truly, truly feel like I'm having, like, an anxiety attack or panic.
Huh.
Which doesn't happen as often anymore because I think I'm so overworked at times that I'm so exhausted that sometimes I just pass out anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Do you... I feel like you must have had people be like, we're worried about you over the years. Or, like, I think you need help. But... did any of those make a difference more than you? Like, I feel like a lot of the times no one, you can't change someone. They have to change themselves. They have to take the initiative themselves. Was that the case for you? Or was there someone that kind of like struck a chord when they were like talking to you?
No, I think I had to do it for myself. Cause I don't listen to people very often.
Yeah.
I'm not great at listening to people. I mean, not
you
like.
You are on your phone right now as we're
talking. I'm looking for the photo for you. I'm not just like, anyway.
You're just like just, it was just a funny image saying, like, I'm not very good at listening to people as you're like on the phone.
No, I'm like hyper listening to you.
No,
I think I just needed to do it myself. Because
I think I asked that because I feel like every time I've like said something out of concern to like a family member or a friend or something, like it falls on deaf ears or whatever that saying is. Like there's, you really can't say anything to someone unless they are willing to say it to themselves or like do something themselves.
I agree with that. I think people need to, I feel like the strongest way for someone to understand is for them to come to their own conclusion. Like you can never force anyone to feel a certain way.
Yeah. Whether it's about
to think a certain way.
Whether it's about changing themselves or even like in relationships or anything. It's just
yeah, I feel like they just kind of have to see the hurt and pain they cause in a, in a fucked up way. Like, you just, they have to get to that point, like I did, that I was just going, I truly felt like I was going nowhere in life. I was like, I can't even show up to a goddamn interview that I set up.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Like, I plan the time. There is no excuse. I just need to, like, get my head literally out of my ass.
And you did. And you're here now with a full-time great job. I mean, you've been going to regularly for a long time, which is very impressive. I don't have a full-time job.
People let me make butt jokes and poop jokes.
It's a great time. And and I'm really, you're someone that I really admire in that, I mean, in a lot of regards, but especially when it comes to self-care and like we all have our, like, I don't know, like downfalls and like we all backslide sometimes. And I think, I definitely have been doing that more often where, like, I need to get my shit together more and more. But, I don't know. I look at you and, like, you, like, inspire me. Because you have, like...
That's surprising to me.
Wait, why?
I don't know. I don't think of myself as anything as someone... other than someone who's just trying to get through the day.
I'm really inspired
by you. Which upsets me.
I'm inspired by you. I respect you so much. Because, like...
That's
again, I don't have a full-time job. I respect the shit out of you for having a full-time job.
I enjoy that you have your free time because I never used to work for the weekend and I never wanted to be the kind of person who worked for the weekend, and I feel like I've become someone who works for the weekend.
But at the same time, you have a steady paycheck. You have health insurance steadily. Like, I also have health insurance, but I have to work a certain amount of days for it. And also do like work I don't want to do, like being a PA. But no, I'm like... I think it's so fascinating to meet someone that has struggled through similar things, but in a completely different way and still come out the other end, because it gives me hope that I can do the same. And like, because I'm still struggling a lot in a lot of different like aspects of my life. But from my perspective, you've almost like steadied out for the most part. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, outwardly, yes, but I have my bad days.
Oh, no, for sure. Yeah.
Like, I have days I have no fucking interest in anyone or anything. Like, you wouldn't even be able to call me and get me to talk to you. Like, I would be like, I don't have time for Shireen right now. Like, I have bad days like that where I'm like, I don't even care what anyone has to say.
Oh, yeah, no. on what day, must have been Sunday, I came back from work. It was like noon and I stayed in bed all day. I didn't talk to anyone. I missed all the calls.
But you had a long weekend.
Well, yeah, but I feel like I fall into these days where I just don't leave my room. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that they were coming more often. I want to jump out of that and know that like self-care is more important to me than that. I know I need to work out more. I feel like working out is like the key to all my problems. But I'm also scared of it because I don't want to like go too hard. But,
right, but I feel like just even doing like weird jumping jacks for 10 minutes will get that energy out. Like that's the thing I've learned is like, if I just need to like jump up and down every once in a while.
Sometimes I'll put on some songs and I'll dance.
Yeah, dancing is
I'll
always.
I'll dance. Maybe I'll do a plank or two. And then I'll be like tired.
A plank or two.
A plank or two.
A plank or two.
A plank or
that's
two.
The move.
Plank
a plank
or two. Plank or two.
Hi, I'm here to teach you about plank or twos.
I feel like we've talked so intimately about so many things. How do you feel?
I feel like you have asked me too many personal questions today.
No, but really, how do you feel?
I feel fine. I feel I'm glad I could share this information. I hope none of you judge me from it because I am a very shitty drug abuser.
No, and you know what? Don't say it that way. You're not a shitty anything.
I'm a shitty poop.
The reason I wanted you to talk about this stuff is because I know people can relate to it.
Yeah.
I know people can relate to it. I think it's so important to talk about, especially when it comes to mental health. It's not a cure-all.
Yeah, that's the thing is I never want to think anyone should in any way think I have a cool life. Because that always worries me that like it might sound cool the way I talk about something, but it's not cool. Like falling off a roof is not cool.
No, you know, were like, injured. You could have broken something.
I could have died. I could have snapped my neck. You know, like there's nothing cool about my life. And it might be like, oh, but now you know you have this job. You have this thing. He's like, yeah, but
you wouldn't have gotten there if you stayed on that path.
Exactly. Like also, I come a long way.
Yeah.
From
honestly,
I don't even think that shit was cool. Now I think that shit's all corny. Like who the fuck parties?
But no, honestly, from my perspective, when I first met you, I thought you were just like a cool person that had drugs.
Yeah. See, I don't want anyone to think I'm that.
No, but like I admit my fault. I admit that I was mistaken. Like everyone has their issues. And I was just like, I want to do acid, and she seems like someone that has all the answers.
That's so embarrassing for me.
No, but I mean, I just want that to be a reminder that like you don't know anyone's story until you really get to know them. And doing drugs isn't cool unless it's like done safely and like with some people you trust. And
even then, everything's corny, y'all.
Yeah. I do love corn, but it is corny. I think
there's a photo. You can see the bruise on my side. Coming around.
Oh my god, it's like bulging out of you.
Yeah. Well, it goes on further. You can't see it as much.
Oh my god, that's like a fucking tennis ball.
It was, yeah, but it was even bigger than that. Like, it went, like, all the way. Like,
oh my god. It's like purple black almost.
Yeah, it was fresh, dude. That was a fresh ass bruise.
You're like upside down on a kickstand. Oh my god, the guy lifting one of your legs is so happy.
Ian? Yeah, I'm gonna go see him. This weekend. I'll see him this weekend.
It's like a fucking mohawk. That's great. Well, I hope you don't do keg stands like that when you see him. Just take it easy.
That's my friend Josh, who now lives in China. That's my friend Tony, who I'll see this week. That's Scott's legs right there. Or that's his little body.
I mean, like, I guess it's kind of impressive that you're still so close with all these people.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you do enough stupid shit, you guys kind of bond over it. Of like, God, we were fucking idiots.
Yeah. Have they all toned it down?
I mean, yeah, we're all old now.
Yeah.
Now you couldn't get me in a keg stand if you fucking paid me. I'd be like, my body doesn't go up that way. You don't lift my legs over my head. Yeah. I'm sorry, I have back problems. Do you even know the pain my shoulder goes through because of how much I have to sit on a computer and type all day?
Wow.
No.
I don't think you've ever done a keg stand.
All right, let's do
this. No, 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 no.
I want to do my first keg stand with Anna.
Yeah. I mean, you are really cool. But no, okay, so that ends this Christmas Eve episode. I hope you guys enjoyed
Merry Christmas.
The intimate details with Anna June. Just happy holidays or Christmas, whatever the hell you celebrate.
Merry Hanukkah.
Yeah, happy Christmas. And
happy boo-boo-boo days.
I mean, there are some movies coming out. Like, I want to see Vice. It comes out on Christmas Day.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, I want to see Vice really bad.
That'll be a good one.
Yeah. Anyways, okay.
Vice, starring makeup. Everyone looks so heavily done up.
But Christian Bale, he gained that weight. It's absurd.
Christian Bale is obsessed gaining and losing weight for roles.
Yes, exactly. It's crazy.
Remember the machinist? We were like, he's going to die.
He's like, I'm an actor. I have a can of tuna a day and that's it.
That's kind of a cute diet. I might do that.
Oh, Anna, no.
A can of tuna a day. Are you fucking kidding me? You are such a loser if you only eat a can of tuna a day.
No.
Christian Bale. That's only to Christian Bale. If anyone else does it, please get help. You're special.
Help,
you're important.
Or, yeah. Okay, follow us at Ethnically Amb on Twitter, AMB, and then on Instagram, we're Ethnically Amb Big, AMBIG. Write us a nice review on iTunes and your podcast app or Facebook if you don't have either of those. And we're on Spotify, I guess you're listening to this, but like we're everywhere, and you should tell a friend about us or your family. Just like spread the word. Do you have anything else to say?
No, thank you for having me on your show.
Well, next week will be reversed, so stay tuned for that. Bye.
Bye.